From WAMU 88.5 at American University in Washington, welcome to the Politics Hour starring Tom Sherwood. I'm Kojo Namdi. We're joining you from WAMU 88.5's Black Box with a studio audience of people ready to ask questions. Can we hear from you, please? Can you shout, applause, do something? Okay, that's enough now. Now you know they're here for sure. But you can join this conversation at any time by calling 800-433-8850. Going to our website, kojoshow.org. Watch the live video stream. See if you can recognize anyone in the audience here, someone who should be at their job right now, who is here instead. And, of course, Tom Sherwood is our resident analyst. He's a reporter for NBC4 and a columnist with the Current Newspapers. Tom Sherwood, welcome.
Good afternoon. Great space here.
And joining us in this black box space is Adam Eidinger. He is co-owner of Capital Hemp and the social action director for Dr. Branna's Magic Soaps. He is the activist who proposed Initiative 71, which legalized marijuana in the District of Columbia. Adam Eidinger, thank you so much for joining us.
It's wonderful to be here.
Yes, we'll be talking about a number of things with Adam Eidinger that he is particularly interested. But Tom and I usually begin by talking about some of the latest events in the news. Yesterday we had on the show former D.C. Mayor Vincent Gray, who announced on the broadcast that he will be running for the Ward 7 council seat that he held some years ago. It was his first venture into elective office. But after he lost to Mayor Bowser in the election of 2014, he has decided, and after the U.S. attorney dropped the investigation into the shadow campaign of 2010, he has decided he's running again.
You know, this is his lifeblood, to be in politics, to be in, he'll call it community service, where he was most of the time. But Mayor Gray feels severely offended by what happened to him, both in the prosecution of the case and the losing to Muriel Bowser. He was a very popular mayor in many respects, did a lot of things. When he succeeded Adrian Fenty, a lot of people thought, oh, well, we're back to the Marion Barry days of government politics, and he proved to be different on a wide variety of issues. But the prosecution scuttled his chance to win re-election, and he lost, and now he's going to start again. The uphill climb began yesterday right here on the Kojo Show.
Well, it's going to be impactful on the composition of the council, because Mayor Muriel Bowser is trying to get her agenda passed by the council, and she's been running into some obstacles. Yvette Alexander, the incumbent in Ward 7, is one of the people on the council who Mayor Bowser can count as a supporter. Talk a little bit about how this can shake things up on the council.
Well, Yvette Alexander also was a very big supporter of Vincent Gray when he was mayor, and now he's kind of not doing her very much of a favor by running against her. It's kind of like what Marion Barry said when he ran against two supporters on the council, Wilhelmina Rolark and Sandy Allen. He said, it's politics, it's not personal.
Yes.
And that's what this is with him. But she did. Yvette Alexander has been very supportive of the current mayor. And you ask him, and he said yesterday, Gray said that he would not go on the council just for retribution and to block everything Muriel Bowser does. But again, this is not far less about Bowser. She needs more members of the council to support some of her programs. He will not be one of those people she can reliably count on.
Adam Eidinger, feel free to weigh in on any of this as a former candidate for office yourself.
I hope people are watching the stream.
Well, I'm thrilled you are letting me weigh in on this because, you know, for the marijuana community, for the medical marijuana patients, losing Yvette Alexander would be a great loss. She's running the program, essentially. She's keep holding them accountable at the health department, and she has a good relationship with the mayor, which is good for the program to run effectively. Mayor Gray has lost the trust of half the city. I mean, the western half of the city, I think, is just, you know, really, they don't trust him. I don't trust him.
Talking about the white half?
I'm talking about the white half.
That's
and
clear.
And I think even in his own ward, there's a lot of mistrust. One thing I want to add is that because of something he didn't do when he was mayor, which is appoint people to the Board of Elections, our minimum wage initiative now, which I'm on the steering committee of, is being held up in court. And all we need is the mayor to just to do their job and appoint people to the Board of Elections on time. But he played games with it and didn't appoint people on time. And now every elected official since 2013 and the ballot initiative we did, Initiative 71, is in jeopardy.
Well, the judge's ruling is being challenged by the Board of Elections because there's apparently a 1998 D.C. law that said that people can serve on the board indefinitely. But, Tom, do you get the impression here that Adam Eidinger is not going to be supporting the candidacy of Vincent Gray?
Well, you know, I think, Adam, your license tag is, what, 420?
Correct.
That's a low license tag. And it, you know, represents marijuana. What is it? I forgot.
It's marijuana friendly. Okay.
Where did you get that license tag?
I got it from Muriel Bowser the same day that she passed her social ban in the council last March. It was sort of like, I know I'm screwing you over, so here's a license plate. And I have to say, it worked, because for a long time I was like, I got this amazing license plate.
Just since this is the politics hour, just for the politics of it, you're on Muriel Bowser's side at this moment.
I am.
And apart from the good things you say Yvette's doing on health issues.
Which I'm sure Yvette appreciates.
But you don't want Gray. You have to support you're going to support her, right?
I mean,
you're
not right, have not, to. It's That's not just right. that. It's the whole like you run a campaign, and I ran a campaign for the initiative, and we were audited three times by the Office of Campaign Finance. And what they said to us afterwards, they said, it's hard to believe, but you guys are the best organized campaign in the city. No other candidate has their finances as well organized as you guys, and we're the stoners. And I look at Mayor Gray and I was like, if you can't run your campaign and know that there's someone spending more than $500,000 on your behalf and you don't know about it and it's illegally raised, how the hell are you going to know about the multi-billion dollar budget that we have in this city? He doesn't deserve to be back in office. I'm sorry. And I like a lot of people who support him. They're good people, but they really should look for another candidate. We can
do
better.
If you have questions or comments for the stoner, I mean Adam Eidinger, you can call.
Should we ask whether he's stoned now?
850.
Are you stoned now?
No, I'm pretty sober.
800-433-8850. You can send email to kojo@wamu.org. Before we get to some more specific issues, apparently D.C. United soccer team, in its enthusiasm to support statehood for the District of Columbia, decided that on their new jerseys they should have the city's motto on it. But somehow or the other, Adidas apparently bungled the motto, and it came out on the tape inside of the jersey saying, without representation, taxation.
This is a well, if you put a comma there, it might work. This is a Twitter version of the, you know, no taxation without representation. But, you know, it's publicity for the statehood effort. I think it's a good thing, even though the wording was horrible.
And, of course, the coach of that team, Ben Olsen, is a big supporter of statehood.
Well, in this program, I'm more concerned about how that stadium looks. It doesn't look like a $150 million stadium to me. It looks like a place for Little League football.
You have said that before. Adam, do you like the new jerseys?
Do I like the new jerseys?
Yes, the DC United jerseys. You're not a soccer fan?
I'm not a big soccer fan, no.
But they're supporting statehood.
I'm more of a baseball and football fan.
It has nothing to do with fashion. Look what he's wearing here.
Okay. As we said earlier, and as
but
you
I like,
have
I root for them.
Heard.
I've been to some games, don't get me wrong. And if the fans like this jersey, great.
And as you have heard, Adam Eidinger is known as the advocate who got marijuana legalization passed in the District of Columbia. It's a fight he's been waging for decades. But you've shifted gears to focus on workers' rights. You even said you'd give up pot until the district instituted a living wage. So I repeat the question Tom asked earlier. Are you off marijuana?
Well, that was like a week-long experiment, so no, I'm not off. But it was a good way to get people to focus on this issue, and that was the whole point, was that, you know, there are other issues besides marijuana, and I'm thrilled that we have increased voter participation from people under 30. Now let's pass the minimum wage increase that's long overdue.
And I should remind the members of our studio audience that if you have a specific question for Adam Eidinger, you can raise your hand at any time, or if you care to comment at any time, you can raise your hand. Of course, if you're listening on the radio, call us, 800-433-8850. We mentioned this. The D.C. Board of Elections, fighting a judge's ruling over expired terms of two of its members, came out of a push for a public vote on raising the city's minimum wage, the issue that you're looking at now, Adam. The immediate effect was to throw a monkey wrench into plans for a minimum wage ballot measure, as you mentioned. But it goes beyond that. What do you see as the possible repercussions of this?
Okay, so you know, I'm familiar with the process of collecting signatures. We need to collect about 60,000 signatures to be safe to get this on the ballot. It takes time. It took the cannabis campaign about 9 weeks to do that, and a lot of people thought that was impossible in 9 weeks. Right now, we probably have only about 9 weeks if everything goes smoothly, and I'm very concerned we're running out of time. And so this is urgent matter. There is going to be a decision on Monday that's very crucial to this, and we'll find out then if the city is winning this or not. I mean, this is the city and the DC for 15 campaign on the same side versus the Chamber of Commerce. To be clear, Harry Wingo brought the lawsuit. He was the president of the chamber at the time. And, you know, it's about greed. We can afford this. It'll spur actually a lot of economic development to have put more money in the pockets of working people who can't afford basic necessities. And I think it's time for basic necessities to be the issue. And we can afford it. I own a business in town. I employ people. We can afford it in this town.
Who will be subject to the $15 were it to pass? What about federal workers who make less than $15?
Well, it doesn't apply to city or federal. Because we can't affect the budget of the city. That's one of the restrictions on ballot initiatives.
Has to be businesses based in the district.
Yeah. You know, why are we having to do a ballot initiative at all? Why doesn't the city council just pass it? Why don't they just do what Los Angeles did? Or why don't they do what, you know, San Francisco is doing or Seattle? I mean, we're a big city. We can afford it. I think it's shameful that our city council won't even bring up the subject at this point. That's what's forcing a ballot initiative.
Some of them are saying that, well, this council in the last couple of years has expanded sick leave. It now has a measure to tell companies they have to schedule part-time workers 2 or 3 weeks in advance. The council is considering a family leave act that would lead the nation for 16 weeks of paid family leave. The minimum wage is already, what, $11.50, or it's going to be?
By 2020, though. We're not talking about 15 today. I mean, this has been looked at by economists.
3.5 years away.
Sure.
So the issue is some of the people saying they agree with all of these. Even the mayor said she likes almost every one of these, but she's concerned about the business climate of the city, that if you get too far ahead of the rest of the country.
The issue is campaign finance, Tom. These guys in the council are all reliant on big business interests in the city, and they're opposed to this.
So all of these other issues, if you are a business person in terms of how many...
If you're a politician and you rely on donations from big businesses, you don't want the Restaurant Association to come against you.
But what about the issue?
I mean, this is about tip wages. The Restaurant Association is going to spend $5 million trying to defeat this. Okay, why would they spend that much? They're working the council, and they're going to work the public. They're going to try to confuse
everybody.
So would
everybody. A waiter or a waitress or a wait person say, no, would, that person would make $15 an hour, and we would do away with the lower wage.
There's a lower minimum wage
for service people, like waiters and waitresses, because they are thought to make tips. So would that go away?
And by 2024. So
2024.
So that would be phased in a different timetable, and by 2024, you know, we might phase out tipping.
Well, they're some of the lowest paid people in the city, aren't they?
It's exploitative. We have people that are working full shifts and not even making minimum wage now because they are tipped workers. And it happens when the business starts to fail that the workers, it's on their backs first. I think we need to really look at dignity for workers, every worker, not some of the workers or half the workers, every worker.
You know, the good thing about having David Grosso in the room, the at-large city council member, is that even though he doesn't join the broadcast until later, he can respond to issues right now. David Grosso, the council has been accused of being cowardly when it comes to the $15 an hour minimum wage because you won't bring it up.
Yeah, Kojo, thanks for having me on, and good afternoon, everybody. I'm glad to be here, Tom and Adam. You know, I think Adam has a way of saying things sometimes that he doesn't really intend to say what he's saying.
Sorry.
In this situation, the D.C. Council has actually been at the forefront, and the mayor has been at the forefront of a lot of these issues in the country. And the issue here is one that is a national movement that I respect and think is a good movement to have. The reality is, though, that it's a way to do this so that it's not too much piling on, so that businesses can manage it and be prepared for it. And that's why you phase it in, and it's graded. You know, as you move forward, you do this kind of thing. And I'm fully supportive of a living wage. In fact, we moved a living wage bill a number of years ago. Mayor Gray at the time vetoed it in the hopes that Walmart would stay in the District of Columbia. That bill then failed when the veto override wasn't successful. So, I think you can place the blame on the government a lot, and I think that's fair. In fact, we're the ones that make decisions. But ultimately, in this area, the D.C. Council stepped up to the plate and passed a minimum wage increase, passed a living wage increase, and is trying to move the District of Columbia to a new place and treating our workers. So I'm supportive of it. I think it's the right place and the right time for everything, though.
That's the voice of at-large City Council member, at-large Council member David Grosso, who will be joining us on the podium later in the broadcast. You're listening to the Politics Hour. Tom Sherwood is our resident analyst. He's a reporter for NBC4 and a columnist with the current newspapers. We're coming to you from the Black Box Studio at WAMU 88.5, where our current guest is Adam Eidinger, co-owner of Capital Hemp, social action director of Dr. Bronner's Magic Soaps. He's the activist who proposed Initiative 71, which legalized marijuana in the district. Questions or comments for Adam, give us a call, 800-433-8850. In the audience, just stick your hand in the air. We'll find you with a microphone. Here is Peter in Ward 7 in Washington. Peter, you are on the air. Go ahead, please.
Oh, yes. Good afternoon. I just wanted to make certain that I couldn't quite understand that, the initiative bill that I do not support was a bill that was passed with very low voter turnout, and that is the reason that it has experienced so much pushback. I don't see how we could have moved forward with something as such as important as legalizing marijuana when only a very few people voted for passage of that bill.
Well, we had elections in which there was a low turnout and in which, if in one particular at-large race a member could win with maybe 15 or 20% of the vote, that does not mean that the individual is no longer should not be placed in that position.
Adam, it wasn't a low turnout. Just look it up online.
It's like
it was
100 actually and something thousand votes, 105, 110,000.
I think it was
votes.
113,000.
Yeah, somewhere
but
in there.
But we saw increased turnout. I mean, the Washington Post did a big story about this, about how voter turnout by people under 40 was up remarkably 30% higher than the previous midterm election. So I thought we did really well with turnout. We registered 10,000 voters through our office, and we believe there was another 10,000 who self-registered, or people who had lived here for 10, 15 years, and then finally they had a reason to register to vote here. They were still voting in other places. They became more engaged in the community, and I think the social club ban, which I hope we'll get to, is also important because we need cannabis reformers want to be able to gather and just be ourselves, and it actually impedes our ability to organize if we can't even meet.
Yes, we will get to the social club law, but here's Tom Sherwin.
Well, I was about to get to that.
Oh, well, don't get to it yet.
Yes.
We have a question on the minimum wage.
All right.
From a caller on the phone who apparently has not identified himself. Are you there? You wanted to talk about the minimum wage in Seattle, Washington?
Yes, it's just a quick question.
What's your name?
Anthony. Calling
Go
from
ahead,
Denver,
Anthony.
Pennsylvania.
Go ahead.
What has the impact of the increase in minimum wage to $15 per hour in Seattle, Washington?
Adam, have you studied this?
I believe it happened in 2012.
Yep. Adam?
You know what? I don't have a great answer for that right now. I wish I did. I haven't
not sure
been to Seattle.
How relevant it is.
But it is relevant. I have friends there, and they say that life is good, but I honestly don't have a good answer for that right now. I'm sorry. What I understand is that they haven't had a drop off or in the demand for people wanting to live there, and I think there's still a vibrant restaurant culture there, but I believe people don't tip anymore.
Well, I think people are concerned that the federal minimum wage has been stuck at $7.25. Virginia and its progressive ways in that commonwealth are stuck at $7.25. Montgomery County and Prince George's County in Maryland have going up to $11.50, I believe. Again, it's people are saying that if you go into all the things I listed earlier about family leave, sick leave, telling business how to schedule part-time workers, mm-hmm. providing all of that, is that you encourage businesses to headquarter themselves outside of the city.
I mean, nothing's like cash, Nothing's like just giving the person more money and letting them decide what they want to do with their own money. Instead of saying, hey, you know, we're going to give these benefits, but why don't we just pay people fairly in the first place? I agree with what you're saying, but I know the council's doing a lot. But
I'm not saying I even agree with what
we're only
said.
At this point because they won't put $15 an hour up for a vote right now in the council. That's the only reason we're at this point, and we know the voters will support it. And we know the public. If the public's willing to support it, why aren't we doing it? And I'm saying it goes back to campaign finance. Bernie Sanders is right. You know, I watched the debate last night. He's absolutely right. You can't trust politicians who are being paid off by big business. They're going to ultimately do things not in the public interest when they get into power. Over and over again, we see this. So we got to like look at where the supporters are of these candidates, and that should determine our support in many ways.
Earlier this week, a lot of people expected a big showdown on private pot clubs, which Sherwood wants to talk about, but the D.C. Council decided not to vote on the question. Instead, they're appointing a task force to study the issue. What would you say is a reasonable compromise between those who want to legalize the pot clubs and those who want to proceed
more
cautiously?
Well, first of all, I want to publicly thank David Grosso and the rest of the council, the entire council, for coming to the conclusion that there was a compromise. They were going to ban this, and now they're going to study it. This is a huge development for the marijuana community. This means that we're still on the path of reform. And I just want to thank you. I mean, I very sincerely want to thank you. There was a lot of, like, anger on the part of the cannabis community of people who support Industry 71. A lot of things were said. There's good relationships between the cannabis community and the city council here, and the mayor even. I mean, we met with the mayor for 45 minutes over this. You know, she is saying things privately that are wonderful, but publicly, I don't like what she's saying. You know,
what she's saying privately.
Privately, she's saying, I want to tax and regulate. Just do it. You know, she's very much in favor. Privately, she's saying, can't we do something to give people who can't use cannabis at home a way to do it legally outside the home? Can't we figure out a way to do this? Like looking at her advisors, you know, at the meeting. So I think that's what she's saying privately. But publicly, she's saying, I wanted a ban and they didn't do it. And I'm still for my ban. And it's like, why? You know, like, you're good on this issue. You fought Congress and won. And now it's just a matter of giving us a place to go. We don't want to be treated like second class. And I think we've been really good about not opening up wildcat clubs in the city. We've been discouraging that as a movement because we think this council will do the right thing.
The chief has said she would shut those down.
Well, I think
you haven't opened them because you'd be arrested.
Yeah.
Tom, is the task force the Washington go-to response?
Yes, it is. It's going to be a seven-member task force. The mayor gets four appointees. The D.C. Attorney General will be on it, and the council has one. And there's
two council people.
So that's then they have 4 months, 120 days to recommend what the council should do. It is pretty much of a bureaucratic sleight of hand.
But they have to give a report. They're going to give a report.
And it's better than just imposing.
I'm more optimistic than you because I see this as a major breakthrough. I felt, and in 120 days, we'll get their conclusions. And at that point, then it's like, will the council pass something? I think we should reserve our judgment until then and see.
What are you hoping the council will pass?
Well, I think the easiest thing is just amend the smoking ban.
Adam, you initially said that if they tried to block this, you would do another initiative to make it.
Correct. Yes, I was threatening a referendum.
Move by the council has preempted that. You can't go forward with that because now you're into this task force. And you guys even aren't on the task force.
Well, I trust Breanne a lot from Ward 1. I think
Breanne Doe is the council member representing Ward 1.
And she really was the first dissenter in the council, I think, to sort of get this to go another way. And I think she's, you know, I trust her, and I trust David too. I think that hopefully he'll be on the task force.
You trust him, but if after the task force completes its mission, they come back and reinstate the ban, will you then launch an initiative to overturn the ban?
Yeah, and maybe for 2018. And you know what else we should do? We should do term limits because, you know, and then we should do some other things. I mean, look, folks, I got a major point here. There are three branches of government in most states, right? This is a unicameral state or district. We have a mayor and we have a city council. The third branch that most states would have is you. It's the people. And we have an initiative process for that purpose. So if you don't like a law or you want it to be overturned or if you want a law passed, it's not getting passed, propose it, organize it, do it on any topic. Let the voters decide. That's the most direct democracy we can possibly
under
have.
Under the law, you can't require the city to spend money.
I know, but so we could do a lot still.
But it can't be any topic.
You got a question from a member of our audience here.
Yeah. So forgive me for my unfamiliarity with the task force and what they plan on doing to study how they are going to proceed with this. But would it be effective to do a case study where we look at, you know, clubs and bars that are currently legal for alcohol, look at the number of car accidents, fights, belligerent behavior that happens from alcohol use, and maybe do a comparison to a cannabis club, and maybe follow, you know, over these next 100 days and see what behavior follows these people after, because I can assure you they might just be going home eating and sleeping.
Well, do you have experience with this?
Well, there
this
are a
is
lot
per
of,
my observation and psychology and justice.
Well, there are a lot of variables in how you would do that study. It would be very complicated to do. And really, I think I do agree with Adam that, you know, the people of the city should have the right in this country under the applicable laws to do what we want to do, not what somebody, a congressman from Maryland says or anything like that. And so I encourage the activism he's suggesting here. The mayor is just concerned that, because you talk about her private conversation, is she's concerned that you push too far ahead of Congress in the upcoming budget. And worse, if the Republicans happen to win the presidency, a one sentence in a federal budget for the district could say marijuana should be deemed illegal in the District of Columbia.
And it'll ignite a statehood movement like never before if they try to overturn a recent election. I think the mayor is not afraid of Congress. She told me, I asked this question, what did Congress do? Did they pressure you? Is that why you had to do the social ban? And she said, I got no pressure. She said, I got none. And I think this is actually more about being cautious trying to listen to the 30% of the public that voted against the initiative. It was a minority that voted against it.
She's been quite clear about this. She said the problem, as she understands it, is there are no rules and regulations. We have liquor nightclubs and restaurants and how liquor is sold and dispensed and who can buy and who can't and all that. There are detailed regulations. There would be no what would the regulations
well,
be?
Well, I think we would look at the smoking ban in the city. We have a very effective smoking ban in public places. There are members of the council that want to reopen the ban and tighten it up a little bit, increase the ventilation requirements. I think that's great. And at the same time, what you can do is out of sight, out of public view, you could have clubs that the owner decides, I'm allowing cigarettes here or not. That's the current policy. Have the same policy for cannabis. You don't have to create a special license. People aren't selling cannabis. I'm talking about BYOC, bring your own cannabis, or BYOM, bring your own marijuana. That's it. We're not talking about setting a place to get it. And we need to get the Harris Amendment removed before we can do tax and regulate, or we need some more council members to get behind David Grosso and others.
Speaking
who want to
of removing
funds.
The Harris Amendment, you traveled.
Who is Harris?
We're talking about Andy Harris, the Republican congressman from Maryland, from the Maryland Eastern Shore. The man was having a town hall meeting out there, and it's my understanding, Adam Eidinger, that you left your Washington residence and headed out to the Eastern Shore of Maryland to that town hall meeting.
Hat like the one I'm wearing right now.
What did you do?
Well, I went with just some friends, and we went to a town hall meeting, and I simply asked a question if he supported federal marijuana legalization, and he came out and said, marijuana is dangerous, and it's terrible, and he just gave a rant. And then I interrupted him, and I said, the voters of Washington, D.C. approved this. And we went back and forth for quite a bit, and the whole meeting got kind of erupted into yelling and screaming. And it was mostly retirees. It was an older audience. And then later, I walked up to him and asked to talk to him, you know, I was waiting in line, and someone filmed it, and I asked him, I said, why don't you just support D.C. statehood? What's your problem with D.C. having equal rights? And he said, D.C. makes irresponsible decisions like legalizing marijuana, and they've got, you know, only, I think he said, a 19% black graduation rate from high school, and he started to throw out, like, false information, and it sounded pretty racist to me. I know Black Lives Matter folks were freaking out when they on Twitter about it right afterwards when they saw the video. So it was sort of like, dude, you are so out of touch. And you're not, you're so, like, you're so mean. Like, we're just Americans like everyone else. We pay taxes. You should be sympathetic to that. And so we're going to go to all of his events.
But you succeeded in, you succeeded in not being kicked out of the meeting, but right now we're about to kick you off the broadcast.
All right.
Can we just say
his birthday is February 16th, and we're going to be there, so.
Whether we like it or not, the U.S. Constitution gives Congress full legislative authority over this District of Columbia. That's what the people who want voting rights want to change. But for Andy Harris to be involved in our business, it's not illegal. It's not an outlier. It's not that. Kay Bailey Hutchinson once told us when she was senator from Texas, she said, when I asked her about voting rights, she said, but we have 535 people looking after you. I said, that's a plantation. Anyway.
Adam Heidinger, thank you so much for joining us.
She didn't explain all this naked man on his...
Adam's handing out stuff.
Well, I mean, this is a Phrygian hat.
We will raise money.
And
I'll
this
have
is for
Andy
Harris, okay.
If you guys donate more.
And, you know,
Adam Heidinger is co-owner of Capital Hemp and the social action director for Dr. Bronner's Magic Soaps. He's the activist who proposed Initiative 71, which legalized marijuana in the district. Adam, thank you so much for joining us.
It's been a pleasure.
I'm channeling Donald Trump. Get him out of here. Don't let him take his coat.
While Adam's leaving, let's take a phone call from someone who wants to comment on one of the issues, because Adam is still in the room, so he can respond at some point. Here's Jonathan in Washington. Jonathan, you are on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, yes. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to bring up a couple points, which is, as a business owner in Washington, D.C., obviously we don't want people like going and drinking in public, and there's legislation that keeps people from doing that. The second thing that I would say is, one, you have people that would be smoking out in public, and, you know, if they did go to work, there's no real way for me to, you know, make sure that, like, they're not high when they're at work. And then second, it's like, what are the provisions of me to actually be able to fire, like, somebody who's, you know, under the influence of marijuana? You know, I'm total in agreement for people being able to smoke in their own private residence, but what about, like, you know, as a business owner, making sure that my employees don't show up to work high?
Well, we'll put that question to David Grosso. He is an at-large D.C. council member who's an independent. He joins us on stage. David Grosso, thank you for joining us. What do you say to Jonathan?
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate being here. It's kind of tough to follow Adam. I don't have as many gimmicks, and I'm trying to do the best I can on the council there. Adam, hopefully you can get behind us more and more as we move forward really progressive ideas here.
Good luck
with
that.
Columbia. You know, whether or not somebody can or can't smoke marijuana has never really been my concern, and I have to say that straight off the bat here. I got involved in this a long time ago when I introduced the Tax and Regulate Bill in 2013 to try to stop people from being arrested for something that I didn't think they should be arrested for anymore, and in particular because I wanted to see people stop going to jail for it. And the reason I wanted them to no longer go to jail is because they were going away to jail for these nonviolent offenses and coming back worse off than they went away, and then our city was suffering for it because we were receiving back people who had no services, who had no education or very little education, and they had been gone for a long time. And you know, in the District of Columbia, you don't go to jail around the corner. You go to jail in the Bureau of Prison System across the country. So for me, this has always been a criminal justice question. I am supportive of continuing to move forward Tax and Regulate because I think that will completely eliminate arresting people for marijuana. And I think we need to revisit the entire question of the war on drugs and eliminate it in every area that we can because it's such a failed federal policy.
Well, decriminalization of marijuana, in fact, has helped that. And the arrest rates have plummeted, and that's a good thing, particularly African-American young men who were the targets. And police were using the smell of marijuana to stop and frisk, jump outs, and all kinds of different things. So you've made great progress there. But again, as you just point out, that's changing the social policy and police policy without legalizing. It's the caller said, well, how are we going to know if an employee comes to work stoned? Is there a test for that so you can fire the person? And I mean, how are you going to manage it? Because we're only in the middle of a football game. We're about the 50-yard line. The goal Adam has is to have marijuana and you to have it regulated and taxed and just like alcohol, right? That's the goal.
That's right.
You can have private clubs. You can all dance in a circle and have marijuana. Do you really just want to? The goal is to have full Colorado style?
I think the goal for me is to tax and regulate it the way we do alcohol in the District of Columbia.
10% so tax on residential.
10% on recreational.
6% on medical.
6% on medical. And then ways for us to regulate where these stores are going to be located, where you can smoke it, where you can't smoke it, all of those things. And if Andy Harris and Congress would start treating us like real full citizens, we would be able to do this already.
Under your idea, would we be able to have marijuana here while we're doing this today?
Is smoking
under your
permitted?
Idea.
No, if is smoking WAMU, permitted?
If JJ approved it.
If JJ said,
Yeo is our general manager,
general
he is
manager.
Here and he's sober.
If well, JJ's here and he's sober.
We haven't done any tests. But anyway, but I mean, seriously, would we be able to have a marijuana radio program?
Well, Tom, if JJ's here and he's sober and he's making sound decisions about the policies at WAMU, there's nothing in a private establishment right now from stopping you from allowing cigarette smoking. You can make that decision if you want to right now. The reality is you can't do that in a restaurant because we've prohibited it in restaurants and in other public places.
I'm not clear, though. Could we, under the vision of the law, would we be able to
you
have
would be
here?
Allowed to do that. In fact, you would have the same restrictions on marijuana that you have with alcohol and the same restrictions on marijuana that you have with smoking cigarettes. So it's a double restriction, and I think it's appropriate that we put very heavy regulations on this. I'm not for free market on this issue. I'm for a regulated approach to all drugs.
For the record, it's not JJ's decision. This is American University's property. That's who the
then you will
decision.
Not be smoking pot here.
There you go. We talked about the task force that you and your colleagues voted unanimously to create, and Tom mentioned the fact that Adam Eidinger's organization is not a part of that task force. Who will be on that task force, and what do you hope to learn in 120 days that you don't know now?
Kojo, you know, whenever I'm on your show, I always say that's a great question. This time I really mean it. I have no idea.
In other words, all the times before, you were just flattering the host, but go ahead.
No, I have really no idea who's going to be on the task force. I think this was a compromise. Ultimately, what we did at the legislative session on Tuesday was stop the vote on the permanent ban on private clubs and move forward with an amendment to a temporary ban that would allow for further study. So it's really a two-step process, and frankly, I don't know where it's going to end up. I think that the District of Columbia government, including the mayor and the council and the CFO, the chief financial officer, need to be willing to violate the Anti-Deficiency Act and tell Congress that we're going to take our rights back and pass the laws that make sense for the people of the District of Columbia, regardless of the consequences. That's the real deal here, you know, and in the end, no one's been willing to go with me on that. I reintroduced the bill last January in violation of the Harris Act, apparently, and we were getting ready to have a hearing with three of my colleagues leading the hearing, and we got all sorts of letters from Congress saying we had to stop, and ultimately we did concede to their pressure and
stop.
Well,
you also got a letter from the Attorney General of the District
that's
of
right.
Columbia, Carl Racine, who supports your goal but said you would be violating the law.
I'm
but
all
you're
for
saying
violating
that you would,
the law
but
here.
But you have said you would like to violate the law.
That's right.
If you have questions or comments for David Grosso, call us, 800-433-8850. You can go to our website, kojoshow.org, watch the live video stream, ask a question or make a comment, shoot us a tweet at kojoshow, or email to kojo@wamu.org. As we heard, attorneys for the D.C. Board of Elections are looking to reverse that judge's ruling on the district's elections board. Do you agree with Adam that this could be a very big deal, including throwing into question everything the elections board has done the past 2 years, possibly even the 2014 mayoral and D.C. council elections?
I have researched this extensively since last Friday to better understand it, and I'm still not exactly clear on how it's going to come down. My feeling, though, is that if you didn't challenge a decision of the Board of Elections within 7 days, which is in our regulations and in our laws, then it's not timely challenge. And this was the only challenge that was done within that 7 days. So my understanding is that all of the elections are valid, all of the votes, all of the decisions they made, other than this one that was challenged in a timely way. And that's very clear in our statutes that you have 7 days to challenge a decision by the Board of Elections. So really the only one in jeopardy is whether or not the $15 minimum wage referendum gets on the ballot or not. And frankly, the judge ruled in every instance that it was appropriate except for this one technicality. And I have to say, I'm just as frustrated as Adam and everybody else that we haven't gotten folks nominated and on the Board of Elections. In fact, the woman that signed it is a woman that has been involved in Board of Elections issues for a very long time, who has in a holdover status now for almost 2 years, is not the chair of the board, signed it as the chair of the board. I think there's fundamentally wrong issues going on here that need to be resolved very quickly. But I don't think any court in the land or anywhere in our democracy is going to overturn elections or the decisions made by elections in this regard for a technicality. The question here is whether or not something gets on the ballot. And I think that is really the key decision that we'll find out apparently on Monday.
Are you content to let it just go into the next election year, 2018?
I'm not sure what you mean by content. I'm happy to not be involved.
You're for the 15. You're for it. I don't know that you're for it or not.
That's a good question, Tom.
I apologize for presuming that you're for it. Are you for it?
I'm for paying people a living wage in the District of Columbia.
That's
I'm
a no.
For a process.
That's a no, right? You're
not. No,
gonna,
it's not.
You're not
no.
Going to sign on to $15 at this moment.
I have not signed on to $15,
good.
But I can tell you that I do support and have supported raising the minimum wage, and I don't think $12.50 or $15 is enough. And I think that over time we need to
enough?
Get no. And I think if you look at the cost of living in the District of Columbia, what you're doing is just picking an arbitrary number that says, "Oh, okay, now we're going to do $15. What is it going to be in 5 years from that? What is it going to be in 15 years from that?"
You
I think the better
inflation.
Approach. Well, the better approach is tied to inflation, get the federal government to move, but also work closely with the business community in the District of Columbia to make sure that you understand their real margins, understand what the piling on has done to their businesses, and then get to a place that everybody can agree on. This is a much more difficult issue than just putting it out for a referendum like that.
We got a question from a member of our audience here.
Mr. Grasso, you're incensed about the criminalization of marijuana. I want to hear you get incensed about how there's no criminalization of what Wall Street does. Last night was the biopic of Madoff. We all know about Eric Garner was arrested. First time he was arrested, his fingerprints were taken. His mugshot was taken. He was jailed, became a felon, came out, had to check a box. But Madoff was selling no product 50 years ago. You have the SEC here. You have FINRA here. You have crimes that are moving through the system, the regulatory system, that are not being turned over to police. What are you going to do about that to bring equality?
I don't think he has any authority over the federal government, but I'm sure
but
he has opinions about all of
this.
You actually said you would go to jail. I mean, those are very serious national, federal issues, but in our little territory here, you've said you would violate the law, you'd be willing to go to jail so that we can have basic governing rights. Do you still take that position?
Absolutely. And reality is that it's very infrequent in life that you have the chance to do a direct civil disobedience act. And, you know, fairly often when you're doing civil disobedience, it's on the street where you're blocking traffic to try to make a message about something else. When you violate the Anti-Deficiency Act and you tell Congress that we don't agree with what they're doing to us directly on whether it be marijuana, needle exchange, anything of that nature where it's spending our money, that would be a direct violation by the government, and that's really an opportunity of a lifetime. And then I really believe, and frankly, just to be clear here, Anti-Deficiency Act has never been prosecuted in the history of this country. It would not be prosecuted, but I would take the chance because I believe that then the people of this city and the people of the country would step up and recognize just how poorly we're treated here and how we deserve two senators and a voting member of the House.
We ought to say what the Anti-Deficiency Act is. It's inappropriately spending money. Right?
That's right. That's it's right. Just saying you can't spend money under the Anti-Deficiency Act unless it's been appropriated by the government. And because we're in a second-class status, we have to get all of our money appropriated by Congress. We don't agree with that. We've passed the budget autonomy referendum and have been acting in accordance with that. But the reality is that in the long run, they would come after us under that law. And frankly, I don't even know who would come after us. I think it's time for us to step up and do something about this and not just sit on our hands. And you know, when it goes back to Wall Street and it goes back to big corporations, I'm all for trying to stop them as well. And I've stepped up in many ways to do this.
Please try to keep your question brief because we're running out of time. And local, if possible.
Very much local. Financial consultants are regulated on a state-by-state by state.
Right.
DC has the DISB. You can do something about it for the people that work out of DC. A crime is a crime. If a person shoots someone in Northeast DC, it makes a news.
What pray tell is a DISB, David Grasso?
This is the Department of Insurance, Securities, and Banking, which is a department that does regulation of insurance industry as well as banking industry. And, you know, I hope that Carl Racine is listening to what you're saying. I think he is ready and raring to go when it comes to prosecuting people like this and making sure that they're held accountable.
Is this the industry where you've recused yourself a couple of times? There's some industry you've
nope.
Recused. That's not. I got it mixed up with another one. Okay, good.
Another question or comment?
Yes, I am a veteran of the 1970s home rule legislation, and I'm wondering how taking out front, rather than say extreme, stand on things like minimum wage and marijuana use and all these things, how this integrates into a nationwide attempt to get home, to get voting representation for this city. Because we worked with a national network to get the home rule legislation passed. And my travels around the country tell me that people are totally ignorant about the situation of the district vis-a-vis voting and representation.
I think that's a great question, is how do we continue to elevate the conversation by using national issues to do so? One of the interesting angles that we'll have an opportunity to do over the next couple months is a paid family leave program. You know, I introduced a 16-week paid family leave. It is not the norm throughout the country. It's really on the cutting edge. If we can get this through the council, then it will be going before Congress, and Congress will have to take a stand and have to think this through. It is on a national movement, though, and so you will begin to see if they undercut our efforts here, if they in any way try to step in there, just like they have with marijuana, which it has elevated the conversation. It's not simple, though, and I would challenge the people of the District of Columbia to step up and understand this as well. It's not just about other states. It's about the people here and engaging in this city in a way that you really can to actually elevate the conversation. The day that we have 10,000, 15,000 people regularly showing up on the steps of Congress or at the front door of the White House is the day that we will actually get full rights in
First
the city.
First thing we have to teach people in other states is that our motto is not without representation, taxation. Former Mayor Vince Gray will run again for his old Ward 7 seat. There's a lot of talk about how the split between Bowser allies and opponents will affect November's council races, including your own at-large race. What's your thinking about this?
Kojo, I'm really concentrating on my race. As you can imagine, I am not going to be getting involved. I'm running for re-election in November as an independent. I have made a good start of it, but still have a long way to go. In the long run, I've worked with both former Mayor Gray as well as Councilmember Alexander really fruitfully for the people of the District of Columbia. So I'm going to try to convince people in Ward 7 to vote for me and continue to do what I can to prove
press
that.
Time.
There's a difference here because you're running for re-election as an independent, right?
Yes, sir.
All right, and that's in the November election. There's no primary or anything like that.
November 8th.
Okay. But 2 years ago, or actually in the last couple of sessions where there have been special elections for the council, you have been one of the few council members to go out and publicly endorse people. I think you endorsed Alyssa Silverman. You endorse, I can't remember. There's at least two or three that you've endorsed. Don't look at me like a teacher trying to remember them.
I've only endorsed one candidate against a sitting council member, and I would do it again and again and again. I endorsed Brianna Doe against Jim Graham, and I thought it was the best decision I could have made as a sitting politician.
So why is it appropriate at that time to make these endorsements and affect what people do? But now, when we have a crucial time where Mayor Gray is trying to revive his career, and Yvette Alexander, you've served with, it's not like you don't know her, why not take a position on that race?
I think it's a different position when I'm actually running and asking for people to support me at the same time. And I think it's smart for me to make sure that I've got all of my ducks in a row.
Strategic.
Make sure that it's strategic, but it's also, I think, appropriate for the timing of this year. I'm also not saying I won't get involved. In the end, you never know what I might do. I'm the kind of person that thinks through these things, tries to understand what all the different angles are, and then make the best decision possible.
The mayor had Fresh Pack, and she was going to use that, and she would love to have that Fresh Pack now for these campaigns to help Yvette. Do you expect the mayor to support you in your race?
Well, as you know, Tom, I'm an independent. I didn't get a whole lot of endorsements the last time I ran, and I didn't really ask for any. And there's a reason why I didn't. Because
would you want her endorsement?
Absolutely. Who wouldn't want to have the mayor's endorsement, the former mayor's endorsement, all the council members' endorsements? I think that's
it's better
great
than having
have,
the mayor run a candidate against
right,
you.
Right. So
I know you're trying to be Switzerland on this. I know you're just trying to be as neutral as possible because you just want to win.
I did introduce legislation to ban the Fresh Pack. Contributions of unlimited contributions last fall and helped to dismantle that because I thought it was the wrong approach to elections. I also have spent a lot of time trying to reform the way we do campaigns in the district, including instant runoff voting, including campaign finance reform. So I'm not your normal candidate. I'm the kind of person that thinks outside the box and tries to move things in a different direction. And I'll continue to challenge all of my colleagues and everyone to do that and to think that way because I believe we'll be a better city over the long run.
Do you think Vince Gray got a raw deal from the prosecutors?
I think Vince Gray did get a raw deal from the prosecutors, but I don't think he's completely innocent of everything.
You are the chair of the council's education committee starting next fall. Nearly 4,000 students, according to the Washington Post, in some of the city's poorest neighborhoods will attend school year-round. It'll give them 20 more school days per year. Is that something that you support?
Yes, I do support an extended year. I also have supported extended days in the past. I think it's important for us to give children an opportunity to learn as much time as they possibly can in the District of Columbia. It's interesting. One of my main priorities on the Committee on Education, as the chair of the Committee on Education, is to try to put every child in the best position to learn. As you know, I've spent a lot of effort in the past year on trying to eliminate the school-to-prison pipeline, and I was hoping to have a minute to just tell a story from this week.
That's
short
all
story.
The time you have.
Just this week, my committee director, Christina Henderson, and I had the opportunity to go out to Coolidge High School and visit with Ms. McKenzie, who is a teacher there. She's been there for 8 years. And she's doing a restorative justice program in her school that is a remarkable approach to how to make students feel more at ease, to make students feel more comfortable in the learning environment. This is something that is a change in the way that we approach discipline, and I think it's appropriate for the city to embrace this across the entire district. We didn't do any big press conferences around it, but we're here to tell people about it because in the long run, we have to start embracing ways that we can reform behavior, make sure people are held accountable without suspending them, without kicking them out of school, but instead inviting them into school and treating them the way that they need to be treated so that they can get the education that they need to become strong, contributing members of our community.
Tom Sherwood.
Chancellor Kaya Henderson has said that she will be leaving but for the 17-18 school year, which is just a year from now. It means the mayor, council will have to come up with a new chancellor. How has she done? Do you support her? You're running for office. You can support the chancellor, right?
Yeah.
You do support the chancellor.
I love the chancellor.
All right. Any ideas of where you go next after this chancellor?
To start with, I think it's not correct to say that she's leaving. I think that she hasn't made up her mind.
She said it publicly.
We just renewed. She said she's going to consider her choices.
You don't know Brussels persuasive powers, buddy.
And in fact, we just renewed her contract and gave her a little bit of a raise the first time in a couple years. And it's important, I think, that we recognize how lucky we are to have Chancellor Henderson in the District of Columbia, somebody who is consistently trying to improve not just everyone's education, but also drilling down into specific populations, which I think is extremely important and will move our city forward. I support Chancellor Henderson, and I will continue to do so.
That's about all the time we have. David Grosso is an at-large D.C. council member. He's an independent. David Grosso, thank you for joining us.
Thank you all very much.
Tom Sherwood, he's our resident analyst. He's a reporter for NBC4 and a columnist for the current newspapers. Tom, always a pleasure. And thank you all for listening. I'm Kojo Nandi.
WAMU 88.5 is your listener-supported NPR news station in the greater Washington, D.C. region. You can support the Kojo Namdi Show and all the regional coverage you value by becoming a member today. Click the donate button at WAMU.org, and thanks.